freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, hello, everybody. Happy New Year. It's the New Year's edition of the Brock and Salk podcast. Sorry we missed you last week. I hope everybody had a great Christmas holiday. And now on to New Year's and New Year's Eve, one of my favorite holidays of the year. Yes, it's now underrated. It's been overrated for so long. It's now underrated. Hi, Brock.
Hi.
How we doing, buddy?
I'm doing good.
How's the Red Box Bowl?
It was lights out.
The red boxiest
the best
of them
they've
all.
Ever had.
Yeah.
Yeah, the CEO, Galen Smith, and I are now like this. He's a Bellevue guy. Oh, yeah.
Isn't that G?
Okay.
Oh, that's Galen Scott. Sorry.
Yeah, different.
Sorry. Both
different.
Galen.
Shh, can't tell that.
Hi, howdy. How are you?
I'm so good, Mike.
Yes.
How are you?
The good. Kyle's here. The gang is here. Hi, Kyle.
Hello. Good morning. Good, morning. Good day.
Right. Man, I'm so
good
glad
afternoon.
We didn't
good
tape
evening.
A podcast
Witness
last
needs.
Week. Man alive. Was I thankful that we did not have. Oh.
We would have talked about Marshawn.
Marshawn. I was so geeked out of my mind to get Marshawn here. And Brock, you know me. Usually. Team brings back old player is not a storyline.
Everybody else thinks he's fun, but I was always the one
not
that
me.
Told you he wasn't. I always sacrifice for everybody. Everybody always loved his little games, okay? And I'm going to just sacrifice.
But I was so pumped about Marshawn.
Yeah.
I thought it was such a great idea. He's not really old. I mean, he's, what, 33? Last couple of years, you look at what he'd done in Oakland, it was, you know, 4.2, 4.3 yards per carry. Like, I love the whole thing. I was so excited, went to the game. We'll talk more about Marshawn here in a little bit. But I love that storyline, man. That's what we would have spent all last week talking about. I don't want to talk about them completely destroy. I mean, God, yeah. Now, knowing what you know,
yes.
How aggravating is it that they lose that game to Arizona? And what, now you have to sit around and root for Detroit last week, which was a horrible experience. God help me. You when you are relying on a 3-11-1 Lions team to beat the Packers and Aaron Rodgers,
mm-hmm.
What an exercise in futility that is. I mean, Kyle and I were talking about how mad we were. Just thank God.
Lions have it worse than Mariners fans.
Oh.
Lions fan, Mariners fan. Lions fan.
I mean, I think we saw him in the playoffs here just a couple years ago.
Lions,
but like they've got the 0-16 season.
Yes. I think the Lions have a worse.
Perpetual ineptitude.
It's also football where like you should be good every 3 years.
Correct.
I mean, like, there's no excuse.
Yes.
Yes, there is. They keep a guy like Matt Stafford around forever. Like that's never going to lead to you being in a Super Bowl. So,
but you need those moments. You have to occasionally have to root for another team and be in those fan shoes in order to appreciate your fans.
True. So everybody who's mad, I hear there's a group of people really mad at Pete Carroll. Not like not normal mad. Like there is a fire Pete Carroll group out there.
I mean, it's the lunatic fringe.
Okay, good.
Not.
Well, I talked to Stacey the other day. She makes it sound like this is like the norm. Like, oh yeah, everybody I talk to thinks Pete's at fault. Needs to be fired.
Stop.
Like, I hope that's not the case.
No.
For anybody out there, if you are part of the said lunatic fringe. And after watching the game the other night, and by the way, I thought Pete made some giant blunders in that game, and we can kind of work through, you know, what happened and why. Anybody out there who came away from losing the last game of an 11-5 season with this roster and this number of injuries and said, they got to fire their coach, I want you to be sentenced.
To rooting for a team
like the Lions.
You have to watch the Browns and the Lions for every second of their season
in eternity. Like, that's your punishment. You go watch the Browns and Freddie Kitchens. Thank God they fired Freddie Kitchens.
Whew.
That guy is a heel. Yes. He's awful. He's a terrible coach. The idea that anybody thought that was going to work makes no sense. And then watch Matt Patricia and watch David Blau.
David Bowie.
I don't even know who David Blau is.
Uh-huh.
He went to Purdue, right?
Sure.
He's a Boilermaker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have to go watch them play the Packers and Aaron Rodgers in perpetuity.
Yep.
Yeah, we're doing just fine here.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of coaches, and wait till you see some of the names that already replaced these guys. I mean, it's just, yeah, you've got one of the good ones. Is he perfect? No. Was he imperfect over the weekend? Yes. Did the team struggle in some of those big game management? I know you want to get into lots of that, and we'll have plenty of time for that discussion as well. Sure, they did. But, yeah, everything he brings on the positive side of the ledger far outweighs any of that.
Well, the culture of this team is remarkable.
Yep.
And we kind of get through – I said we'll talk Marshawn sort of a little bit. But the energy and the vibe and the way Pete plays to all of that stuff, and get, it's amazing the way his team, I don't know how a team can look as dead as they did in the first half and then show up the way they did in the second half. I don't fully understand it. Part of me wonders if they were a little awed by the Marshawn moment, like it was almost too much for this group of mostly young players and it took them 30 minutes to actually, you know, determine that they were going to be in the game and go do their thing. But he finds a way almost every week, and that's why the Arizona game kind of stands out as this outlier, to get his team up, ready to play, and even when they are missing massively important people on their roster, and as it turns out, Quandre Diggs, you know, we used to do those, like, rank the
irreplaceable
level.
Wow.
I might put Quandre Diggs 2.
And Russell.
Yes. I don't know, and tell me I'm wrong. Quandre Diggs, I think, might be the second most irreplaceable player in the Seahawks team. We've seen them without Jadeveon Clowney, and you know, they find a way with Jefferson and Green, et cetera, Lockett goes out, okay. Metcalf, I mean, like, you can't lose all of those guys. We've seen them replace Chris Carson. When Quandre Diggs goes out, the level of play at the replacement there, because for whatever reason, Marquise Blair is, like, I don't know, banished in a closet like Craig James's kid.
That didn't happen. That's all fabricated.
Whatever.
Carry on. Okay, you leech truther.
Well, that was widely disproven by ESPN and others, that never happened.
The level of drop-off when Quandre Diggs goes out, whether it's Lano Hill or earlier Tedrick Thompson, it's incomprehensible.
Yeah, the defense the last couple of weeks been problematic. And you give up over 8 yards per play against San Francisco. You realize on the season, by the way, and this has been a running theme over the course of the year, do you know where they ended up in yards per play allowed in the NFL this season?
Out of 32 teams?
Out of 32 teams.
28th.
30.
Oh.
30. It's 6.0.
Nice.
6.0.
Yards per play?
Yards per play allowed defensively. That was 30th in this.
How many of those can you directly attribute to their safety play?
Yeah, there's a bunch in some of your linebacker play and some of the injuries and some of the lack of cohesiveness and some of the base defense and some of the stubbornness and all of those things come into play. And yet they were, what?
12, within an inch.
12 inches? Seven inches?
They were within an inch of winning that game, Brock. They're within an inch of winning that game. By the way, you know, kind of go through the sequence. Once they got down to the goal line, you spike the ball. Okay, you got three chances now from the six. Mm-hmm. And we can get to how they got there also. But three chances from the six. On second down, Russell, he had Hollister open. He just missed him.
If he didn't step up, he stepped up. There was pressure, and he stepped up even into more pressure.
But he just missed him. I mean, he's open. He missed him. That one you got to put on Russ.
The same exact play that Russ got picked at San Fran by
Sure looked like it.
That absolutely was the same concept. So he was not going to leave that one short. There was no chance that was going to get intercepted.
True. Good call.
So he erred on the side of... On second down, I'm going to be a little cautious. Yeah, this could be my guy or nobody.
Okay, so second down, he airmails it. Third down, you get the was it pass interference or not. I don't think I would call that pass interference, but I get it. The rest of the world seems to think it should be. Okay, fine. And then on fourth down, you're throwing to like a 210-pound tight end. Yep. I'm not that surprised that he wasn't able to run over Greenlaw. He's just not that big.
Yep.
So on all three chances from the six... Not the one.
Not the one.
Not the one.
Not quite the one.
Not quite the one.
Could have been the one.
So were you still at the stadium? You didn't leave early.
No, I was there.
You stayed.
But just answer me this.
Yeah.
The Seattle Seahawks. This is the only, because I know there are people trying to compare this to the end of the Super Bowl, and I don't see much of a comparison other than this. You have Tyler Lockett. You have I guess Marshawn Lynch. You have DK Metcalf, and on all three of your chances from the six, you give the ball to Jacob Hollister? I don't get that. And that's why it reminds me of all the things they did wrong at the goal line in 2014 Super Bowl. One of the biggest mistakes to me is you threw a pass to your sixth wide receiver, Ricardo Lockett. Great guy. Awesome special teamer. But not the player I want to be the target of the biggest play of your life.
But remember.
And in this case, it's not that they threw once to Hollister. I know he came through in the Bucs game with a huge touchdown. He's been probably the third best receiver in this team.
Yes.
They targeted him three times in a row.
Yes.
Come on, man.
Do you remember on 4th and 10 who they went to, though?
Yes. Yes, I do.
For Johnny Yu.
I don't think they were.
The first reception of his career.
I don't think that was designed to go to Ursua so much as it ended up with
Ursua. Can I give you one more thing in common with 2014? Chris Collinsworth.
The result?
No, Chris Collinsworth tone of voice.
his disgust.
From a broadcaster standpoint.
Oh, my God.
That's exactly what it was. It was
a delay of game. Yes.
His tone of voice in that moment. Howdy, you are a voice expert. I challenge you this week. Go back and look at the intonation and the volume and the pitch, whatever, of his voice. When they threw the pick, it wasn't as nasty. Like, the pick was, oh, my gosh. But I'm just talking the tone. The tone of when they took that delay of game was the exact same. Yes. And, of course, it was called.
I think that's fair.
Yes. And he was like,
but
oh
that's
my
fair.
Oh
deservedly
my
so.
Brock.
Oh,
Brock.
My word.
You're gonna. I know I've heard you kind of walk through some of this. I've heard Jake walk through this.
Yeah.
It's not that they got a delay of game. It's that they weren't out of the huddle.
Russell was still on a knee.
It's not that they got a delay of game, that like they were trying to get it off, yeah, and Russell's doing the furious clapping thing and
Joey
trying to
Hunt
get the ball.
Can't get the ball out because
come
he's
on,
too small.
Go. No. They're calmly sitting in the huddle. Russ is actually sipping a cup of tea.
What is going on here?
Somebody's working on their shoulder pads. Somebody else is retying their shoelaces.
Okay.
How in the world?
Yeah.
And I've heard Pete's explanation of we just didn't quite get it done. No, Pete, it's a little more than that. It's not that you didn't quite get it done.
Okay.
You didn't come close. So, you didn't come within 20 seconds of getting it done.
And that's why Russell's partially to blame as well. His clock was not going off.
Nope.
Literally, he was on a knee in the huddle.
So you three men know a lot about me. Okay, you do. Over the years we've spent together, you three men know me as well as just about any other men out there outside of my men's group. The one thing you don't know about me and what I am excellent at, and what I am really good at this, is I am tremendous as a passenger in a car giving directions. I have like
you better be because you're pretty awful in the driver's
seat. That's fine.
Seat.
I knew that was coming. I knew that barb was coming and I got Teflon. But I am excellent at it, all right? I am the son of a driver's ed teacher. I actually have technology.
That helps, okay?
I see ahead. I look ahead. I am two steps ahead in directions. So I am, when we leave stadiums or we leave, I am excellent. And in fact, this Red Box Bowl, we got to the airport, and Joe Davis is like, that was remarkable. And it's well because I was in the passenger seat
right,
and not our normal.
Wow.
Our normal spotter in the passenger seat plays checkers. He can't do it.
Well, and Santa Clara's a tough one because we heard John Clayton explain this year that he had spent 2 hours trying to get to the airport from Santa Clara.
Not to mention the six flights it took him to get back.
Well, then
he
flying Santa Clara to Denver to Boise.
A little bit wonky. Okay, but Joe was a little upset on the way there. He finally yelled at our spotter. He said, chess, not checkers. Because Joe's dad's the driver, and it really messes with him. Like, oh, you're going to take a right. But he's never two steps ahead.
Okay. So, explain.
And when it comes to Pete, in those moments, it feels like checkers and not chess. And that's the biggest challenge. And you've said this a bunch, Salk. You said it just a little bit ago. Monday to Saturday, no one better. Not even close. No one better in this league building a culture, building belief, building confidence. On Sunday, when it comes to some of that game management, and in that moment right there, you had to be ahead of it. You had to say, Marshawn, get your helmet. Whether that's running back coach, whether that is his son, Nate Carroll, who may be in charge of personnel, whatever it is, you have to be two steps
especially,
ahead.
Especially.
You have to play chess.
Especially where Marshawn hasn't been there.
Correct.
If that's something that you think you might want, A, you know Marshawn's personality,
yes,
and B, you have to know he hasn't been there all year. You've got to be pretty, be extra clear. Right, we all know Marshawn's not going to be in the game once you get to 2 minute drill. It's not really his game anyway. Andy hasn't been there.
Yes.
If you're going to think that there's a possibility of goal line offense, which I don't know, should probably occur to a coach somewhere along the way,
get in the end zone.
Yes.
But here's the thing: it's not just that they don't have the personnel group ready to go, and they end up taking honestly one of the worst delay of game penalties I've ever seen in my life, or is it a delays of game? I'm not sure. Regardless, it's one of the worst I've ever seen.
Because they weren't even out of the huddle.
But Brock. It would have been very easy for them to just, you know, call timeout. If only they hadn't taken two of their three timeouts on that final drive without stopping the clock.
Yeah. The clock was already
stopped. The
clock
was already stopped. I mean, they didn't take them appropriately to either get the ball back or to stop the clock after playing on the
middle. They used one to evaluate a big fourth down decision.
I am willing to say before fourth down, you probably needed to call your third and final timeout.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. The other one was called a play before, after second down, where the clock stopped on a play out. I think it was either an incomplete or it was a play out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
And on second down, you once again couldn't get the play in on time. You got down to 2 seconds left. Russell started calling for the ball. It looked disorganized, and they called timeout from the sideline because they were disorganized there and couldn't get the play in on time on a crucial drive. That is the reason that Russell had to spike the ball at the 1 yard line rather than call timeout there. That is the reason you ended up with a delay of game and moved back to the six and only had 3 shots from the six instead of 4 from the one because you wasted one of your timeouts. Now, I don't think they should have called the one with 2:35 left. I wouldn't have called that because I think you were bound to end up giving San Francisco too much time, which they ended up, you know, sort of taking 30 seconds of their. I would say they wasted two, but I understand the first and third.
Yes.
The one in the middle is right there with the delay of game. It's arguably worse. Yeah. And by the way, neither of those two things were the worst mistake Pete Carroll made in this game. The end of the first half was an abomination. What he did. The only reason it didn't cost him 3 points that he called timeout to get the league to take another look at a play that was already in his favor and allowed them to turn it back into an incomplete, which gave San Francisco 30 seconds back and the ball in a better spot. The only reason it didn't lead to them being down another 3 points is because for whatever reason, and I can't tell you what, Kyle Shanahan decided not to go for it from his 30 with 45 seconds left. Against a defense that was a shell. That's mind-boggling.
So what do you want to do? This has been a...
Nothing.
How long have we had this?
Right now, nothing.
Okay.
But I think once we get to the offseason, there's got to be some sort of a change, and we can talk about it once this team is done. And hopefully that's in February after winning a Super Bowl. But it's become a problem.
What would be fascinating to know?
No, it's always been a problem.
Yes.
It's continuing to be a bigger problem because honestly, and I know you guys have called me negative for this, this team has like 5 good players. And they have found ways to win. And I give them an enormous amount of credit for it. But in the last 4 games, they're 1-3. The chickens are starting to come home to roost on this team. I know Dave Wyman likes to talk about all those different chickens and where they roost. They're coming home to roost. Russell Wilson is otherworldly. He was incredible in the second half of that game the other day.
Yep.
They ran the ball well enough. They get big plays occasionally from their defense. But they're not a very good team. They have an incredible quarterback, and the rest of their roster is right now somewhat mediocre. And because of that, all of these little coaching mistakes, in-game coaching mistakes, that they used to find ways to overcome, they can't overcome them all because they just don't have enough talent with Chris Carson hurt and Dwayne Brown hurt and everybody else.
Javon Clowney hurt, Quandre Diggs hurt.
They can't do that.
Will Disley hurt.
You've got to play everything else perfectly. Yep. And unfortunate because you're throwing to a 210-pound tight end.
Yep. You know, it'd be fascinating. It'd be fascinating to hear the black box. Right when they had plane accidents, and they had a catastrophic one on the day of the LSU game, just a catastrophic plane crash. And it turns out the little plane does not have a black box, doesn't have the information to really learn what goes on. Some of those little planes and private planes, I guess, don't carry some of that. But the black box is the headsets. It would be fascinating to be able to listen to air traffic control. Right in those game,
I don't think I want to.
In those game management situations, I think you have to.
I don't want to.
And I think if you're GM and you're president and your head and your owner, I think you have to listen to those black boxes. And I don't know. I mean, it would be fascinating how much Pete is truly on it, how much he's truly listening, how much he truly empowers others. Who are some of the other set of eyes and ears? And Carl Smith, who was up in that booth at times as a sounding board for Pete over those years. And not that that was flawless by any means, nor is it flawless for a lot of teams in this league. Okay, to be very honest, we are hypercritical of this because this is one of Pete's weaknesses, about one of the very few of his weaknesses. But, Mike, it is the weaknesses of a lot of coaches and a lot of organizations, and why John Clayton will tell you over the last 2 decades, 7.5 coaches a year are fired. Upwards of double digits get fired at times in this league, but on average, 7.5 coaches out of 32, a quarter of your league turns over every year because of issues and challenges like this.
Brock, your point is really important. Like, we need to figure out what's actually wrong with this process.
Correct.
Because if you don't actually find out what's wrong and where the problem is,
yes,
you're going to end up with the Seahawks blocking situation with Tom Cable and Daryl Bevel and Pete Carroll. Who is it that's responsible for this? If you keep coming back and saying, well, it's everybody, there's not one person, you continue to perpetuate a problem over and over.
I imagine that headset, Brock, sounds like this.
Well, a very, very heavy divertation tonight. We had a very Darrison bite. And let's go to Terry's and no look laughing. For the head of the pit.
No laughing. Remember, that's not funny, okay?
Like, I imagine that that's what you hear on the headset. Like, okay, guys, it's second one. What should we do?
Well, a very, very like, heavy divertation tonight. We had a very Darrison bite. Let's
this?
Go ahead.
No.
Terry's and look for the bit.
Oh,
the
we're making fun of people for having like medical events and episodes.
I'm not making
yeah.
fun of anybody.
It turns out it was just blood sugar with her. She did not.
Right,
it was not
she
a
was
stroke.
Fine. No? And I'm sure that's the case with whatever's going on. I'm sure that's exactly the case with whatever's going on in her headset. It's just a very Barry Darrison.
It's a common thing that happens with low blood pressure. You get to Darrison very, very quickly.
You hit Terrestation, Lishkin a bit ahead of the pit. And that's it. It's very simple.
It's a blood sugar
thing. It's any wonder they couldn't figure out which 11 guys they needed out on the field in the biggest moment of the game.
Very curious where you were going as I saw you digging in the news box over there. What exactly is he going to find?
What sort of Darrison Bertation is this guy cooking up?
Well, a very, very heavy divertation tonight. We had a very Darrison bite. Let's go to Terrestation and look for the bit behind the pit.
Yeah, we just couldn't quite get
I
it communicated.
You were go with
we almost had it. We just couldn't quite get the final
I
communication.
I thought you were going to go with Grape Lady when she fell.
No, that was poor Jacob Hollister almost getting into the end zone. Yeah. So anyway, look, you're right. We are sort of picking at the scab of Pete's one great weakness when we need to also spend a tremendous amount of time talking about how he has this roster playing this well. It's
DK
remarkable.
DK Metcalf was the best rookie receiver in the league.
How he might be the best rookie receiver since Julio Jones.
How he got Travis Homer ready to go and play a tremendous game. How John Ursua got thrown into a situation there at the end of the game on a 4th and 10 on a season-defining play. And he makes that play, and he comes up with it. Of how many guys that he gets and grows a sense of belief that you're going to go out there on the biggest of stages and be your best go out and get it done.
You've used the word resilient.
Yes.
And Pete himself is very resilient. It's probably not a surprise his team takes on some of those characteristics.
No question about it.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want me to go somewhere with that?
Yes, I wanted you to talk about it.
You want me to get to some of this?
It wasn't on the sheet. No, that's not what we talked about ahead of time.
Hey, we
right?
talked about this backstage.
That's not the question we asked about.
Hold on, are we live?
You know, you don't do a radio show every day. All of a sudden, some of that nonverbal communication goes right out the window.
No, I know that I have talked a lot about that, and it's been a huge, huge part of the season. And I don't think they're 11-5 and playing Philadelphia and playing in these playoffs if that's not a part of it. But I also know, Mike, that there's a bunch of issues. I kind of put through a whole list here of things I think. Versus things that I know this season. I know this narrative about Pete's teams getting better in December. I know this. It's got to end. That is one thing that I...
Last few years.
Yeah, I mean, the last 3 years, you're 8-7. You know, so 2 years ago, you had the same December as this one. Last year was better. But just that you can snap your fingers and say, oh my gosh, this is just going to change. And I know it's going to change. No, it doesn't. You still have to play these games in the month of December. I think this is a very resilient team. It's the only way to explain how that game came down to inches. There is no other explanation. You said what happened at halftime? I think what happened at halftime is Pete looked to a man at the 45 that were suited up and said, no one else is going to do this for you. You guys are sitting there waiting on somebody else to go and do this. You're sitting there waiting on Marshawn to break a run. You're sitting there waiting on Russell to scramble, make a play. You're sitting there waiting on someone else to make a tackle. You're sitting there waiting. You guys, the 45 of you in these pads, have to be the ones that are resilient enough to flush that half, to flush the last two halves in this building, and go out there and have the courage to actually pull the trigger and go out and get it done. Mm. I know that Pete's sidelines, and we just talked about this in headphones, are as emotional as any in the NFL, and while it creates a ton of juice.
It does.
It does
Let's
create
stop.
Some of the
Before
chaos.
Before you get to the chaos, which we've now sort of discussed, and it's Barry Darrison or whatever, but it does create a lot of juice. And the amount of energy that they have on the sideline is unprecedented. There just aren't other teams in the NFL that have that. And I don't want to just sit here and repeat because, honestly, I think the world of him and this the timeouts and the management of that stuff, which I've been on him for, you know, for years, I don't want it to seem like now that we don't talk to him every day or every week, it's just about kill Pete for that. It's not.
Mm-mm.
The job he's done with this team... He probably isn't going to win Coach of the Year, especially after that blunder in that moment. on national TV in the final moment of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
But he should be one of the top three candidates for it. And what he's done with this group, Harbaugh's probably going to win it, or maybe Shanahan for taking a 4-12 team a year ago and getting his quarterback back and doing what he's done. But Pete should be in the top three for coach of the year this year with this roster, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, I don't think there's a doubt.
I know that this complete roster, Mike, to play off that point, the complete roster is a playoff team in 2019. I know that.
Yeah, with Carson, healthy Clowney.
With your best tight end, your best lineman, your best running back, your best pass rusher, your best, what became your best secondary player, yes. All of those bests who unfortunately could not contribute on some Sunday night or contributed in a very marginalized way with Clowney's injury. I know at that, with all of those guys, this is a playoff team. I do know that. But the fact that he got stripped of most of that over the course of the season and they're still 11-5 is a heck of an accomplishment. I think this is a better road team. I think this is a better road team than it is a home team. And I'm trying to discover why, and maybe next week, hopefully after a road playoff win in Philly, we can further jump into that. But 7-1 versus 4-4 is real. It's a bottom line business, and you went 7-1 out on the road, and you went 4-4 at home to put yourself now playing these playoffs out away from CenturyLink. But this was a better road team than it was a home team.
So, are you good
season.
With going to Philly?
Yeah, I think
instead of being home against Minnesota, are you good with that?
I think so, and I think stylistically and matchup wise and injury wise, yes,
I think I am too. And and I kind of got into this, you know, the Detroit game was really frustrating. It really was because you had. You know, given away your chance to control your own destiny for a bye by losing to Arizona last week and just an awful game, fine. All right. You know what? Eggs happen, unfortunately. And Howdy, that's why you never say that any game is going to be a cakewalk, because you never know when Arizona might rise up and knock you around like they did the other day. But once Detroit lost and it took the first round bye out of the equation, difference between winning and losing that game really, I think, is low. And I know people were getting mad at me and saying, well, the division championship is on the line. I don't care one iota about a division championship. Mm-hmm. I just don't care. Mm-hmm. I care whether or not you have a better run towards a Super Bowl. And if you want to make the argument that you're better off as a three seed because you could host a NFC championship game, fine. All right, maybe. But this team has not been significantly better at home. Mm-mm. They've been arguably better on the road with their backs against the wall. Minnesota is, I think, a better team than Philadelphia. And then you would probably play San Francisco instead of New Orleans, which is also an easier path, in my view, to getting to a Super Bowl. So, look, you can make the argument that it was an important game for them to win. I think it was. I think they kind of accomplished everything they needed to. They showed that, once again, they can play with the 49ers, who are the number one seed, and they get to go to Philadelphia instead of being home against Minnesota. That seems like, and they didn't have to play Quandre Diggs, who they really need back badly. That's a pretty good win for me.
Yep. Yeah, they do. And they showed in that second half life. They showed a stinger. They showed some energy. They showed some, okay, we can actually go and do this.
Do you think this gives them almost a, we have something to prove now? Like, they don't go in.
It gives them almost? Absolutely.
Like, in some ways, it's almost better that Hollister doesn't get in. That they have that unfinished, I mean, Marshawn's been talking unfinished business. The fact that you were one inch away from getting into the end zone in what turns out to be a somewhat meaningless result, does that, like, all of the energy and juice they need now to go forward?
They applied that card after the Rams loss. We applied that card after the Cardinals loss.
Yeah.
Well, they need a late loss doesn't hurt a team.
True.
And then, you know, apply it again here.
But this was a different kind of loss. They got run in both those games. They got run in L.A. They got run against
and then we
Arizona.
Heard, like, Shaq Griffin and people, hey, you know, we needed this. It lights a fire.
You're right.
We needed to get checked in
but
our
I get that. I just wonder whether or not there's something to – we played well. We were right there, and we're an inch away. We were right there. We had it within our grasp.
That was Pete's talk yesterday.
And now we're showing we can play well, and we can – you know what I mean?
We're just a mistake away.
Yes.
It's not that we have to fix all of these things again.
Right.
If we don't make one mistake, we are as good
as any
team.
I think you could say a mistake. If Hollister just rolls faster into the end zone, they're in. They win. Forgetting it, and all of the other stuff is washed away like normally it is with Pete. Like, did he make huge mistakes? Yeah.
Could
but
you
at the
stop,
end, Russ threw a timeout.
Threw them at all? Was there any time you thought they could stop them?
No.
Yeah, when the guy took a 15-yard penalty against Plano Hill for no reason.
Averaged 8.5 yards a play.
They punted twice.
8.5
yards. Just for the
play.
Record, the Seahawks came within an inch of winning that game, despite getting shut out in the first half, forcing only two punts and making multiple coaching blunders and didn't force a turnover.
No.
That's remarkable.
Yes.
I was there.
Against
I still,
the NFC's number one
seed. I was there, and I still can't quite comprehend how it happened.
They gave up over 8.5 yards a play. Every time San Francisco, they couldn't cover anybody.
Right. Felt like more. Oh. Every time Garoppolo planted his back foot, it was like, someone's right. wide open.
Wide open.
There's probably Debo Samuel.
And even then, the Niners probably could have, if they had just run a few more fly sweeps against them, they probably couldn't have had an additional 50 yards in that game.
And Garoppolo actually missed 3 or 4 throws.
So let's get back to what the answer, because the answer to this is simple. Why are they able to do all that? First name Russell, last name Wilson, man. It is that simple. What Russell's been sublime. And when he's not, they struggle. But Russell's been incredible this year. And he's done it all without Doug Baldwin, right? Without either of his top two, maybe three tight ends. He's been breaking in a rookie in DK Metcalf, who's been great, and Russell's helped him be great. And he lost Tyler Lockett for some time, and then other parts where he just clearly wasn't himself as he was trying to get back in there. Russell's done all of that. That's been him. Oh, and by the way, he's done it without really any ability to run.
And three quarters of his offensive line has gotten injured.
That's true.
And three of his top running backs are gone. He's lost literally everything that your quarterback needs to be successful.
And he can't run anymore.
Yeah.
So you put all of those things together. What Russell's done this year, maybe he's not the MVP, and it's probably going to go to Lamar because Russell's a wild card and this and that. Fine. But man, has he been good. And he has sure been everything you could have possibly asked for with the gigantic contract he got.
No question. And now you got to go get it done in Philadelphia. And you do that, you're going to end up more than likely in San Francisco for round 3 of what's been an unbelievable fight.
What has Russ done best this year?
That. He's made everybody around him better.
How?
Just instilling a sense of belief, and it doesn't matter. I've said to you how many times, and I think this was one of his challenges for the first 4 or 5 years of his career, is can you trust the people around you? You've got to pull the trigger as quickly to X receiver as you do to Doug. That confidence that you play with and that belief you have in Doug, you have got to play this game with anticipation, right? If that was the one thing early in his career of holding the ball, and at times he will still do that, but I don't think it's about personnel. I think it's about ball security, right? That little high throw to Hollister, that concept, he knew. Like, man, that linebacker undercut that and made a great pick on it. It's not happening. His ball security, 5 picks this year, one of them which was tipped. Right, a career low of just 5 interceptions with 31 touchdown passes this year. That's off the charts.
Of his 5 picks this year, one was the batted down pass.
Yes.
And one of them was a end of the half heave.
Correct.
So he really threw 3
egregious
picks.
Interceptions and in 16 games.
Two of them were as bad as you could possibly be.
Yes, they were. But he threw 3.
Yeah.
In 16 games this year.
Amazing.
That's what he did best. And then it doesn't matter. If I got a new center and I got a new left tackle and I got a new tight end and I got a new running back and I got a new wide receiver and I got all this newness around me, I have got to instill because I am the man. This is my team. This is my offense. And you know what else was awesome in that game, which just makes it so stinking hard how bad it was at the end, was his management at the line of scrimmage in that second half.
Awesome.
Dummy fake after dummy fake, checking to this play, getting to that, like just running the show. And they did it flawlessly in that second half until they didn't.
until Russell was on one knee leading the play as Barry the play Darrison. Clock expired. All right, well, that may have been the worst moment of the 2019 season, but the best moment, I don't think that's in much doubt, and it's next. All right, Brock, we kind of started off with this, and it's hard to let this wait until this long in the podcast, but the Marshawn thing was... It was awesome. It is so funny, man. When and we can kind of go through. I have like 7 or 8 different things I loved about the like Marshawn being back and the moment and all that. But the lead up to it all week, thinking about how this game was going to be meaningful and Marshawn Lynch of all people was going to be there. I know that I generally get down on bringing back Ken Griffey Jr. or, you know, the only person who could possibly back up Russell Wilson is Jake Locker or Matt Hasselbeck or any of these old fogies because you're like, oh, it's the same person who was here. I love them. Mm-hmm. Marshawn's different from all of that, man. Yeah. The idea of bringing back Marshawn Lynch, I managed to forget instantly about all of the garbage, about all of the negative, about all of the problems and that he can lead to in a locker room over time. And I just focused on how much fun it is to watch that guy.
In 10 years, and we're not even doing this on an everyday basis, so I think it would have been amped up even more, Mike. But in 10 years of being a part of this and being around the Seahawks as much as we are, I never, ever felt the reaction to a move the way that I did every single place I went.
Genuine love.
It was astounding. It was the clerk at the grocery store that was just like, come here, man. I'm like, hey, how you doing? He's like, can you believe this? I'm like, what's going on, man? Good sale? What? The crab legs and steak? No. Marshawn. Marshawn is signed back. They're bringing back Marshawn in line to pick up Titus, right, from school. The teachers, right, through the drive through. Can you believe this? Marshawn is coming back. Marshawn, in 10 years, this is not hyperbolic. There has not been a move, a transaction, something that's other than the Super Bowl loss, right? Yeah. Just emotionally, and not in a game, but anything off of the field. I have never sensed a reaction like it was when that move was made.
All the dramatic things I have ever seen.
It's true, though.
Marshawn is back. He is a Seahawk. He's in Rogers' box announcing he is back. Oh, my word.
Didn't it kind of have that same vibe, though? I mean, that's sort of the same thing, right? Yes. As Clemens coming back to the Yankees and that big moment. Except the love between Marshawn and this fan base specifically was unique.
Well, and also the ending was unique. The ending, he was the first of all of the dominoes, right, of some of the bitterness.
True.
Of the Bennett and the
Hanging
Sherman.
Hanging
him up. Yes. Yep, he threw up his cleats. It was, you know, the way it ended was just so just not gracious, right? That was the beginning. It was the first big domino. And yet, he comes back, and all of that is so immediately forgiven. And Pete, by the way, again, to go back to his strengths and not just nitpick at a scab, this is his absolute strength and where he is going to be at his very, very best. Welcome back home. Come on back, prodigal son. All that other stuff, all the rules you broke, all of the chaos, all the gray you created, all of the mess of times that it was in the relationship to deal with you, Pete, the perfect one, the perfect father to welcome home the prodigal son.
All right, so I got about 10 things about the Marshawn. Yeah, I got about 10 Marshawn-related notes, observations, things that I loved about the Marshawn story all the way through the game. The first was just, Marshawn's only 33. I know this kind of got talked about last week, but Marshawn's only 33. This is not bringing back Ken Griffey Jr. in the last year or two of his career. This is not Ichiro Kyle for the fourth and fifth time. Guy's 33.
Is Ichiro 50 now?
I think he's 52.
51.
Yeah, 52.
Rumors he's coming back next.
He's going to be back.
Jamie Moyers, 48.
He's going to catch, actually, for the Mariners next year. Mm. In his last two seasons with the Raiders, Marshawn averaged 4.2 and 4.3 yards per carry. This is not a 40-year-old relic that you dug up and threw him out there just for the name. He's still good. He's not in his prime, and I don't think it's fair to ask him to be. But at 33, he is just outside of his prime and perfectly capable of going out and taking the 10 carries or so that he had on Sunday night.
Again, we critique the chess versus checkers, right, and talk about some of the game management. Was this a move of chess to bring him in a few weeks back and just, you know, when he came to town and said, hey?
I think so. I think it's thinking a couple steps ahead. I thought it was really well done.
Yep.
So I love that. I love that Marshawn this is not just, you know, 40-year-old throw him out there for the name. You know, this isn't Brian Bosworth coming back now. It's Marshawn. He's 33, and he still, you know, can go out there and play football, as I think he showed on Sunday night. Two, I think it's a reminder of what the reunions may be one day with Sherm, with Earl, that all of the negative stuff gets forgotten eventually. By the way, some of the positive stuff gets forgotten instantly. You saw the awful column in the Seattle Times comparing this to the end of the Super Bowl, and I know a lot of people were making that comparison right off the bat, as if the last play Marshawn had with the Seahawks was the end of the season in 2014. Mm. What did he play, 2 more years after that? He played 15 and 16 here. The Seahawks had plenty of plays at the goal line. Remember the whole thing where Doug and Sherm got all mad at the goal line play? Like, we've been through this. People just forget about it because the big moment was still so powerful.
Sure.
Well, the same will one day be true with Sherm and Earl and Bennett and any of the guys that left here under adverse circumstances. When it's all said and done, you'll remember the good times, not the awful ones at
They'll
the
let
end.
Love.
Don't you think?
Oh, yeah, and this was the first indication of that.
And Pete, obviously, is game for that. That's who Pete is.
Yep.
I'm glad Marshawn talked after the game. I know he didn't say a ton. And I know he cursed every other word so as to make sure that it was unusable virtually anywhere.
You feel me?
But I wish Marshawn would talk more, and I'm not mad at him for not talking. I don't want him required to talk. I don't think that the Pro Football Writers of America should get together and force Marshawn to say stuff. But I do think it's too bad he doesn't talk more because he's fascinating when he does.
Sure is.
He's just an interesting dude, and I wish we could learn even more about him. I wish that he would find a few people in the media that he liked and trusted. And I understand that he doesn't like and trust all of them, and he doesn't want his message tainted.
Most of them.
Fine. Find two or three smart, good interviewers. Take Danny O'Neill. Just decide Danny O'Neill's my guy. He's a smart guy. He's really fair, and I'm going to just talk to him whenever. It's not about, or it doesn't have to be somebody at our station. It's not about us. Just find somebody. Maybe it's Ed Werder, like Brett Favre. Mm. You want Ed Werder to be your guy, and that's the guy you're going to talk to and nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Just go be like Barry Bonds and Pedro...
Kenny Mayne. Let Kenny Mayne be your guy.
What was the guy's name? Pedro Gomez.
Pedro Gomez.
He was like Barry Bonds' official spokesperson.
Yes, he was.
Because Ed Werder and Brett Favre.
Yes.
And Brett Favre texted me. Excuse me. A source told me.
Marshawn is really interesting, and I'm not mad at him for not talking, but I really wish we
even
got
in
more
that profanity-laced 90 seconds, he was more transparent than he'd been in years.
Yes.
Like my legs, man. I didn't have my legs. Finally got my legs back on that one. Like, he was just transparent. Transparent.
I liked him referring to himself as your boy. Yes. Like, all of it was great. Like, he just, he's such a fascinating, funny, interesting individual. Yep. I wish he would do more of that. So that's number three. Number four, I was there, and seeing him on the field before the game was a riot.
I bet.
So everyone comes out, and I don't know if you guys got to see any shots of this, right? Everyone's in full uniform for the pregame warmups. Marshawn does have his uniform on, but it's tucked up under his shoulder pads. So all you see is this gigantic, thick, fluorescent green sweatshirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had his gloves, of course, in his face mask. I thought he looked like he might have weighed 400 pounds from where I was sitting. And it's
No, early observations from my friends. By the way, I had a friend in the suite level on the field. He's like, dude, Marshawn looked big.
He did. Because of that green sweatshirt and the way he had it, it was not that he himself is actually that big. Because you could see once he got in the game, I thought he looked like Marshawn Lynch.
I thought he looked smaller than he did maybe in 2016.
I kind of agree with you, but wearing what he was wearing, it looked ridiculous. It was so, and he's just clowning around out there being Marshawn. I was like, man, I hope this goes well. So that's four. Number five. The intro they did was incredible. Kudos to everybody on the defense for saying introduce the offense. And then kudos to Marshawn for saying, no, I want to walk out with the other two running backs. It was a special moment, man. It was cool to see. And I'm glad Russell still came out last. Mm-hmm. This is not now Marshawn's team or anything close to it. This is still Russell Wilson's team. And he should have been the last person out. And I'm glad they did it that way. But I loved Marshawn coming out there with Homer and I guess Turbin, although I'm not entirely sure why he's here.
Is Turbin around?
Oh. I don't really get that move. I'm not going to delve too deeply into it. But how cool is that?
You just wait till he busts a 55-yard trap ball in Philadelphia.
I'll keep waiting.
Yeah, you just wait.
Well, it was a cool moment for the fans and for the team, and just a really that was a cool deal.
Yep.
Number six.
Wow, you really did have 10.
I did.
Jeez.
Seeing him and Russ in the shotgun, that read option set, it's just cool.
Peanut butter and jelly.
It just looks right. Doesn't it?
Yep.
When you see the two of them in that set, you're like, yep, this is very familiar to me.
Like Mike Sweeney and Ken Griffey back-to-back in the lineup.
Yes.
Right.
One of those natural moments.
The ticklers.
And it just there's something about the way Marshawn runs. Who else runs with their knees out? Like, he's all knees. He's all knees.
Remember, Roger Craig was all knees, but it was like vertical.
Yes, Marshawn stick outwards at 45-degree angles. He has like obtuse knees. I don't know how you tackle him. His knees are out. And that leads me to the next one, which is Richard Sherman didn't want any of that out on the edge. Did you see that play?
Mm.
Woo, they gave Marshawn the ball coming around the edge. Sherman had like a chance to maybe go stick his nose in there. He's like,
yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. Yep. I'm just going to kind of play patty cake out here. And yet somehow, two plays later, he was right there willing to stick his nose in on Tyler Lockett and bring the 5'8" wide receiver to the ground. He didn't want any part of Marshawn, and I think that's a good sign that guys still respect what Marshawn
brings out
there.
Marshawn had way more touches than they expected.
Yeah.
Along those lines, I think they kind of saw him run. You can only see so much in week 17 of practice where there's no pads, there's no hitting, it's nowhere near game speed. I don't think they had any plan in talking to the people around the organization that he would get as many touches as he did.
Mm.
My number would have been about five. I think maybe if he has five or six touches.
Really? I had actually heard the number six plays.
Yes.
When it was before. I had heard somebody say he would only be in there for six plays. And
no
I'm glad that wasn't the case.
Nope.
Go out there and play him, especially, again, this is where we were talking earlier. The result of that game was not going to be the most important thing. Go find out what he's got.
Yep.
Go send him out there and see whether or not he can play. And that's why Marquise Blair should have been in. Go send the kid out there and see whether or not he can do what you need him to do.
Number eight.
All right. Number eight, he made Homer better. He just made Travis Homer. I mean, yep. I thought Homer had an awesome game, didn't he?
Homer had no regard for human life. He was just, he would
including
just
his own.
Fly, yes. Yeah, mainly his own.
Yep.
He would just take off, just leap, helicopter around, get
by the
smashed.
Way, for I like that guy. 4 years in Miami, that's what he was. That's why he covered kicks and punts and madman.
Nuts.
Yep.
He's got a little Thomas Rawls to him. I don't know about personality-wise, but kind of the way he does.
He's Rawlsing all over the place.
The way he runs, the way he kind of looks at
that curse on him.
I know. I don't want to be, that's almost rude.
Number nine.
But he had a good game, and I'd like to see the same rotation with him and Marshawn next week against Philly. The moment where Marshawn scored, that's a pretty good memory.
Yep.
For anybody who was in that stadium on Sunday night and anybody who's watching at home, that's one I think that people will remember. That's one that will last, don't you think?
I thought Rabel could have given an old-time Religion Lives for just one more time. Like if he would have just pulled out a little old-time, you know, for Dave Niehaus and that call of Griffey's home run, just one more. I mean, it was a tremendous call. Let's not kid ourselves. Rabel was all over it, and you could feel his passion. Well,
the old-time Religion did live. It did have that same feel as the Griffey home run of like, oh, my God, Marshawn just scored in this game. It's crazy. And he would have scored earlier if they hadn't tackled him as he was out on that route.
He could have scored later. Mm-hmm. He could have three touchdowns that game.
Unfortunately, that brings you to the last one.
The old-time Religion live.
Thanks, Dave.
Junior does it.
Oh, that's so good.
He wasn't ready. I mean, we're going to put this on Pete, and I think we should, but Marshawn also wasn't ready, and that's part of the Marshawn package. Are you 100% sure? Are you 100% sure when they get on the bus to go to the plane, to go to Philadelphia, that Marshawn's going to be ready to go? Are you
that he just might refuse to board.
Are you 100% sure that Marshawn is going to be ready to go to Philadelphia?
Yes.
You're 100%? Yep. Come on. Yep. You are not.
I'm 100%.
No, you're not, you liar. 100?
100 out of 100.
No, you are not.
Yep.
That's part of what it is.
Podcast check. Yes. I'm 100 for 100 that he's going to make it.
Podcast check? It's like a 30 cents. You don't make any money off a podcast. What are you, crazy?
Yeah, wait till the royalties roll around. It's a long game. Oh, once we go into syndication, then we'll start getting these checks.
We'll be on TNT and TV Land late at night. Yep. That's when you really make
that's how Jerry Seinfeld makes it.
All right. Well, it's good to have Marshawn back. I hope he does something in Philadelphia to help the team win. Brock, before we answer the question, Jerk, at the end of today's podcast, we're going to spend a few minutes on your favorite subjects of college football, including what I think has to be one of the best football games I've seen in years. It's next. Well, Brock, this is your time of the year. This is one of our age-old fights about the importance of bowl games and whether or not they matter and, you know, the ones other than the championship and playoff games and this and that or whatever. We can get to the Huskies. We'll get to the Cougs here in a minute. I just wanted to start with what we saw on Saturday. That was one of the best football, college football, pro football, whatever. That game was one of the best games I've ever watched.
Unbelievable.
I was fascinated.
And that's Ohio State?
No, I mean LSU, boat racing, Oklahoma.
Yeah, well,
boy, was that a joy. No, Clemson, Ohio State. That's one of the best football games I've ever watched. Just fascinating. Those two teams got after it, and there's so many good players on both. They're really evenly matched, but somewhat different styles. Yep. And unlike a lot of other college football games, this is always generally my problem with college sports, college football especially, you had two quarterbacks, one on each side, who were absolutely ready for that moment.
No question, and absolutely going to be NFL studs. Yeah, that checked every one of your boxes. Oh. For me, I think what stood out as much as anything else is when, you know, and we get into bowl season and it's, oh, this guy's not playing. And, you know, we saw it here with Washington. Guys going to protect themselves for the next level, get all of that. Sure. And it's
well, because
part of it.
Their games don't matter.
But you get to that game and the level of sacrifice for the guy next to you. The Dobbins has a hurt ankle. I'm going to come back in. I don't care. I don't care what it means. And I'm risking my future.
The wide receiver for Clemson must have gone out three times.
T. Higgins and the other kid. Yes, both get beat. I'm coming back in the game. Trevor Lawrence looks like he's left for dead. I'm coming back in this game. I am not going to leave this game. The absolute just gritty culture and identity that those coaches have built. One in the South where Boy Howdy spent some time. One in Columbus, very different. Demographics very different. People very different. The way they go about it very different. But absolutely similar in the dog. The dog that was barking and was just relentless in every one of those guys that played.
How are you rooting for Clemson after being there and meeting Dabo?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big-time Clemson
that's
guy.
That's no major
I'm
big
a huge
fan,
Clemson
right?
guy.
That's fair.
But really, anything that's going to knock out the SEC or Ohio State,
same.
Those are the two villains. You get those two out, I'm on your side.
Yeah, and I don't care about the SEC part as much, but I'm rooting against Ohio State always and forever. Like, I can't stand Ohio State. And seeing Urban Meyer over on the sideline.
Isn't Clemson overtaken as, like, the evil empire now? What? Well, I want Clemson again.
No, because
you know
the SEC-
what? Like another Clemson title.
I like
that
it.
Would really get me excited.
They're in the ACC,
they
which is a joke.
They built themselves from nothing.
Yes. I don't know.
No history and tradition.
I do find myself rooting for Clemson, and the fact that they've had pretty likable quarterbacks. I mean, going all the way back to my guy, Taj Boyd, I really thought was going to be a superstar stud. I was wrong about that one, but Watson is and has been everything he was cracked up to be and more, and I think Trevor Lawrence will be as well. And I got to admit, I like Dabo. I mean, he's not necessarily, you know, I don't know that I'd want to hang out with him necessarily, but I got to say, just watch after watching a spectacular football game, and it was back and forth, great game. I do want to ask you about the targeting thing and what you saw at the end of that game, but the way Dabo answered questions, look, it can't be that hard to do this. Here was him right off the bat when
Maria Taylor.
Yes. Yeah, the Maria Taylor finds him for what's usually a check the box interview on the field, and he just doesn't treat it that way.
Came out there with 3 minutes and we said, hey, let's go win the daggum game, man. I mean, let's make some plays. We've been saving that little play action to Travis the whole game, and just felt like it was the right time to call it right there, and it hit.
Oh, gosh. He said that they've been saving it the whole game. Do you think that's going to ruin his program and all the secrecy? Do you think they'll still be able to play in the championship game in 3 or 4 weeks or whenever the heck they do this? When is the championship game? July? Mm-hmm. Do they wait till July to get these two teams back out there in the field together?
The NFL plays week 17, the wild card round, and the division round. And then college will play.
January 13th.
Good. Yep. But it didn't hurt anything for him to just be like slightly transparent and give us, the fans, a little bit of a sense of what happened. And then he perfectly captured what all of us were feeling.
What a football game. It's a shame somebody had to lose that game. I told Ron, I mean, that Ohio State team, what an unbelievable game. That quarterback, the back, just those guys played their hearts out. But in the end, our guys showed what they're made of. You know, they got the heart of a champion. They got the eye of the tiger. And, man, the favor of God is just with us tonight. And I mean, just unbelievable.
All right, so I understand Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, Greg Popovich. There's a few coaches who have specifically gone the other way. Mm-hmm. Fine. I don't begrudge them that. It's the people in the middle that I don't really understand.
Yeah.
Is it that hard to do what Dabo just did? And this is not a member of the media whining that the media is mistreated. It's not about being in the media. This is just me, the fan. I'm not in the college football media. I don't care whether Maria Taylor gets a good interview or not. I have no vested interest in her. So spare me the media just wants the media to be. It's not that. I like hearing Dabo Swinney talk after the game and explain what he saw. I enjoyed watching the game as a fan, and I loved hearing that it meant the same thing to him and that he recognized it. It's cool hearing a detail on this is why we decided to do this at the end of the game instead of,
blatant lies every day, all day long from everyone.
Or instead of waiting for like Madden football expert to break down a play and why they did it, how cool is it to hear the coach tell you this is why we decided to run that play? Like, why can't those interviews be like that?
Because I think many of them find this tension and this conflict point of, do I want to let my guard down? And here's a guy
sure,
that's
killing Dabo.
Here's a guy that's won a couple titles. He's going to be in his fourth title game in the new playoff era that has got that, right? Got the pelts on the wall and can be just totally transparent and real. And I'm not going to pretend to be anything. I'm just going to let my guard down and let you feel what I feel, which I know millions of you watching this game are feeling.
Well, then if Belichick and Saban and Popovich have inspired some to go in their direction, will Dabo Swinney inspire others to go? Because if I'm a 17-year-old kid and I'm trying to make my decision on where I want to go to school next year, and I see Dabo talk like that after the game, guess what? I want to go play for him.
Oh, guess what? He's got the number one recruiting class. And guess what? He's got like four of the top five D linemen in this class, all committed and all signed a couple weeks ago to Clemson because of that. Yeah, it's real. And guess what? It's really hard for those coaches to leave. Finally, one of them did. His co-offense coordinator took the job finally at USF, but most of them stick around there.
Yeah.
They get compensated unbelievably well. You've got that culture of just transparency. The dudes love it. They love to play for him. He loves it. He lets his guard down. He's transparent. It's pretty remarkable.
Quick local spin on that, though. Jimmy Lake, is he more Chris Peterson? He's more Dabo Swinney in terms of that element.
Much more Dabo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
he's
got some of that. He's going to be much more transparent than I think Chris was.
How about Mike Leach? No?
How about it?
Not as much in that category. We're not going to put Leach there. Can you imagine if Leach gave Jess those kind of answers after games? That would be great.
He's transparent.
All right. Is that targeting?
Yes.
Should he be ejected?
They've got to change that rule. Okay. I think in the next
by
5 years,
he has to be ejected, right?
By rule, there's no choice. Right. In the next 5 years, is that competition, their competition committee, unlike the NFL that meets and get things done every year, They can't do that. It's an every other year deal. It's not going to get done this offseason.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
But God forbid.
Yep.
Because they don't have enough money to get them together.
But I think in 3 years.
The SEC has walked away from CBS because they're about to bring in so much more money from ESPN. Yep. They can't afford to get their competition committee together every year.
It's just wacky. Yeah, I don't think it's a finance thing, but it's a control thing and a wacky thing. Now, they did this year tweak targeting, and it had to be confirmed. It could not stand. So it had to be, you had to re-legislate the whole call, right? Once it went to the replay booth, and it's either confirmed or you're flipping it. There's nothing that stands. In time, you're going to have a flagrant one and a flagrant two. You're going to have a, you know, you saw the Oklahoma LSU game. You saw the Nickelback, Brendan Radley Hiles, just cheap shot the running back with his right under his chin and try to knock him out. You're ejected. Yeah. Sorry.
And they should be. Fine.
Absolutely. Flagrant two.
But this,
you have a hit like that in the heat of the moment in a football play, that's a flagrant one.
And that should be a 15-yard penalty.
Correct.
I think we all can understand this idea of you've got to be in control of your own helmet. It is up to you.
You're going to have your eyes up. You can't put your head down.
Sorry, you broke the rule, but you didn't do it on purpose. You didn't try to knock somebody's block off, and you don't need to be ejected.
Yes.
That being said, the way the rule is written right now,
that's
the right call.
That's the right call.
Is it also the right call? Is that an incomplete pass?
No.
I disagree with you.
I was
not at all shocked. I thought that was 100% incomplete.
Oof.
Why not?
Oof. I thought he had control of the ball. I thought he took two steps. And regardless, whether we agree or disagree with the actual call in the moment, once that call was made on the field that way, to me, you could not turn that over.
I totally disagreed. I saw him still bringing the ball down. And yes, he's got it in his hands, but he's bringing it down to his body when it gets knocked away. I was not at all surprised. I mean, I don't know what the call should be necessarily, but I was not at all surprised that they called it incomplete.
To me, that did not define the game. If the Buckeye fans want to spend the next 11 months or 9 months arguing about that or clamoring for that, they will. But let's be
real. When they're not busy defending Urban Meyer, they'll be clamoring for that.
You had the lead with 3 minutes to go, right? You would have had the lead there by the same amount. You had the lead at the end of the game with 3 minutes
to go. They let Trevor Lawrence go right down the field in like 25 seconds. And then unfortunately, and I feel so bad for that kid, Agave, that's his name?
Alave,
sorry. Yep. He went the wrong way.
Yep.
He turned the wrong way. He's good. Every time I've watched them play, he stands out. And I've talked to G, because obviously G's kid is going to be a wide receiver at Ohio State next year, which is going to be hard for me, because I'm going to root like heck for G's kid. But I really don't like Ohio State, so it's going to be like a personal challenge for me. But G tells me that that's who that kid is.
Yes.
He took responsibility, took accountability afterwards, said, I screwed it up. And he's been their best receiver.
College football has been on a remarkable run, if you think of it, the last 4 or 5 years in these games, in these playoffs, in the magnitude of moments, in the unselfishness of Jalen Hurts when he was benched and Tua got in.
That was cool.
Oh, I mean, just these storylines.
And then coming back in and helping them win. And that game with Watson at the end where they kept calling all the penalties down at the goal line.
Yep.
Tua's big moment. I mean, like, they've really had some special I know there are folks who say that 4 is too many and they can go back to 2. I disagree. I think 4 is right. And if they went to 8, I wouldn't object to it. But I think they have it right now with 4. Mm-hmm. There's generally between 3 and 4 best teams. This year they were 3.
51-1.
And if this year we had only had the old BCS and it had come down to either LSU or one of Clemson or Ohio State, it wouldn't have been right.
Nope.
I mean, I get it that Oklahoma didn't quite belong. Okay, fine.
Yep.
So the number one seed gets to play a patsy. I'm okay with that.
Yep.
But there were 3 teams this year that I think have a very real chance of winning a championship, right?
And July 13th, when they meet, is going to be awesome. When those two play in 6 months, it'll be great.
It'll be hot. We'll all have been just taken off of the July 4th weekend. And finally, one day,
all
those
these
kids,
alumni of schools are coming back from their NFL teams they've been drafted to play for their college team. Oh, it's going to be great.
Possibly. Why aren't they playing this Monday night?
Know.
It does not make any sense. What a confusing sport college football is. But it's cool. The Huskies won a bowl game on, December 7th this year? When was that?
I think it was like the 14th.
It was
16th.
Way before Christmas. But go Huskies. You got a big bowl win over a team that's in the whack.
They were underdogs in that game by like
sure
6
were.
Points.
Did they play a WAC? Is that the Washington Athletic Center?
What is
the WAC? When you play a team from the WAC,
that's the Mountain
is that
West
like a group of like 65-year-old guys who work at law firms downtown?
Pelt on the wall next to the Southern Miss win in the Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Take it easy, Mr. Cheez-Its.
They play for the – they're in the WAC. So they
got his 2 wins.
Those are the guys, Brock, you see naked using the hairdryer on the full body.
Bro,
they play for the WAC.
Can we go answer the question, Jerk?
Do we have to? I want to hear about the Huskies' big win.
Heck of a win.
I don't want to hear
put
about
it all together.
The Cougs at the Cheez-It Bowl. What was that, Kyle? You get rolled by a service academy?
I was predicting they would lose by 30, so they played that much closer than expected.
It is wrong. I don't want to spend too much time on the Huskies. I honestly don't think that
Nobody
bowl
does.
Win means anything.
Come on.
Watch your mouth.
But I'll spend a second or two. And the Cougs, I think, do have a problem. They have a limit. They've reached it. And that's not to say that they should get rid of Mike Leach necessarily, but they are never going to be better than they've been. The Luke Falk, Gardner Minshew, this era, it's never going to be better because Mike Leach won't let them be better than that.
But are you ever going to get better than Mike Leach?
No, and maybe not.
I'm not asking you. I'm asking Kyle. Kyle, are you satisfied because Mike Leach is going to get you to bowl games, going to win you games?
Sure, they can get a better. Will they ever get a more successful coach than Mike Leach? Is that the question?
Yes.
Sure.
You think so?
Would you be willing to risk moving on from Mike Leach, say, okay, this is where it's at. This is the new bar that he has set. He's taken this program from awful.
Yep.
He's taken them to relevant. He's taken them. I mean, they won 11 games, right, 2 years ago, and that was greatness that year. But by and large, it's going to be good. I think over the long term with Mike, it's going to be good. Are you willing, would you be willing to just live with that for the next decade? Or would you be willing to take a risk and saying, nope, I think we can do more. It may be worse, but I'm willing to take that risk.
I think it's a false premise. But no, I won't. I don't think that you should move on.
You think there's still a ceiling? They haven't reached the ceiling yet under Mike Leach.
Well, I don't think that they're going to say we're going to move on from Mike Leach because we think we're going to obtain a better coach.
What do you mean?
Well, that's what you're asking.
Why
should
else?
They fire Mike Leach to go hire a better coach? No, they should not do that.
Because you're good where you are.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's fair. I'm not disagreeing or arguing with you, but you have to understand, I think, at this point, that as long as Mike Leach is not just not a great defensive coach, but is actively hostile towards his team game planning defensively for a group like Air Force, there's a limit. Like, as long as he refuses to change his offense to play against Jimmy Lake and refuses to change his defense or even, like, spend a moment on it to play against Air Force, there's a limit to what they can accomplish,
right? I mean, it's
right?
like asking, should the Seahawks move on from Pete Carroll?
I don't think it is.
Why would they?
I don't think so. I don't think
this is the
like
most
that.
Successful head coach this team has ever had.
It's
should
like
they
saying,
fire him to risk improvement?
No, it's like saying, should the Chiefs ever move on from Andy Reid?
Is he the most
That's
successful coach in
like.
The history
is that the
of the franchise?
Old, is that the yes. highest possible
okay.
thing?
He is, but Andy Reid's limited. He's never won a Super Bowl, and there may be some reasons
Yeah,
for
I
that.
Know. Obviously, Pete Carroll's had more success than Mike Leach. I'm just saying,
well, but the Leach,
you have the best coach you've ever had. Should you fire him?
Yeah, but I think
else?
With Pete Carroll, I have no reason to believe he can't get back to another Super Bowl. I think there is a specific limit to what Leach can do. And by the way, I like what he's done in great things for them and has been the perfect coach for Pullman. But watching the way he his disregard for making changes to his offense against a team and a defense that clearly has it pegged, and his disregard for even game planning for
Pete Carroll's disregard for clock management and timeouts. Like you can apply these same. Every coach has their weakness. That's
Kyle,
Mike's. We
could
went
you,
through.
Could you
beats.
Imagine if Salk was a went to Wazoo and a died in the wool just Wazoo
no,
fan?
I just couldn't
dealing
imagine.
With
you
Leach?
Could stop it. Could you imagine if Salk went to Wazoo?
You don't think I'd have fun there?
No, I don't think you would. I think it would have been below your moral and educational standards.
That's probably true. Let's answer the question, Jerk. Next.
This is Brock and Salk's Answer the Question, Jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
Oh, we got some hashtag ATQJ. Answer the question, jerk, all through Twitter this week, Brock, as it has been forced to be due to the new podcast schedule.
Were we trending last night when that was Twitter?
No.
Did we trend?
No, I think we lost that. We lost the wind beneath our wings there.
Oh, that's too bad.
We weren't trending.
It's New Year's fault, though.
No
New
one's
Year's
on
Eve.
Twitter.
Everybody's trending up. It's true.
Well, we missed calendar. A week. I mean, we skip a week, right? When Marshawn signs, I get it. People are angry.
I was busy watching The Lighthouse.
Has
anyone seen The Lighthouse?
The preview gave me anxiety.
What is that? A movie?
You've been excited about that movie for a while.
It was really good, and I never, ever want to see it again.
Robert Pattinson, Willem Dafoe.
And that's it.
Three-person cast because there's another character
sort of,
in it, sort of.
Barely.
But
it's really just
the
two. No one else has a speaking line.
It's a play, basically, in movie form.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a... It almost feels like a either like a movie a college kid made or like a movie that was made in the 30s.
What?
But it was
college
really good.
Production.
Black
I know.
And white.
I don't know.
It's all in black and white. There's a lot of sort of old like horror tropes and stuff. But then, like, incredibly well acted by these two guys just being descent into madness. It was pretty good. Huh. It was weird. Nice. I don't want to see it again. I liked it. should we start with a question from a friend? sure. from our friend Tyler. Settle this debate. York peppermint patty, which I know is one of Brock's favorites.
Yep.
York peppermint patty, candy bar or not?
No.
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 Nope.
A peppermint patty is not a candy
what
bar.
What is it?
It is a glorified breath mint. It is something that your parents eat to make themselves feel good about eating something that's not good.
But Brock loves those.
Loves
but the name is right in it. It's a patty.
Yes.
It's a patty. It's like a hamburger patty.
That's
it's
right.
Interesting, though. It has, I mean, it's covered in chocolate.
Right.
It is very, especially the large ones are very much candy bar-like.
And it's all sugar, yes.
Right? Well, it's not a bar.
I would say it's a candy bar.
And it sits candy, on the same section.
Hold on, do you consider Reese's Peanut Butter Cup candy bar?
Yes, no. Absolutely.
That's candy. What are you talking about? They're the same
shape. Absolutely.
Nope. Very different.
That's candy. That's a cup.
Wait a minute. I am
and
okay.
The other one is a patty, how and the other is
not,
a bar.
How can you not put the two of them together? Kyle, your argument's fine. You're going to say neither's a candy bar. I'm with you.
And I'm with Kyle.
Howdy.
You want to be a literalist about these shapes? You're totally beyond what we're actually talking about here. A candy bar is an indulgence that you take on as a finishing part of a
candy
meal.
Candy is an indulgence.
A snack.
Candy is.
That's a candy bar. All right?
I think it's a candy
bar.
Are
Nerds a candy bar? Are Runts a candy
bar? Those are candy.
Are Starbursts a candy bar?
Especially banana Runts. Those are good. I like the banana Runts. Those are the best ones, as you know.
We know.
Yeah.
King Mike Banana.
If you we've had this before. I think if you had to move to a city outside of the USA, where would it be?
Well, Vancouver, BC is way up there, but it's kind of cheating.
Yeah,
it's mostly
it's really
just
the US,
Seattle, just Portland. Portland. Yeah, but otherwise, I would say like a remote village in Costa Rica.
No,
I would love to do that.
Nope,
Tuscany.
Yeah, I was gonna say Paris.
It's got to be in Italy somewhere.
Like Paris.
Give me Italy.
Great. Or Sydney. Sydney, Australia.
Ooh,
that actually probably my answer. Sydney is pretty awesome.
Fires in Australia, bro?
Yeah, that's no good. If you had to choose, this comes from Brandon, would you rather have your wife or girlfriend collect things like knickknacks or have an eye for an expensive item that could be purchased cheaper, like she really wanted Gucci purses or designer shoes? Which would be better?
For me, knickknack, paddywhack, give this dog a bone. Absolutely. You can knickknack my house. All day long, go for
knick-knack,
it.
Give him a knickknack room. It can just kind of hide in the back somewhere.
You can have every room you want to knickknack. That's fine with me. Please don't develop an expensive taste.
Yeah, I mean, both are bad. Both are definitely bad.
You know what I say?
But
you
the
and
knickknack
Heather,
thing drives me crazy.
I say you and Heather.
The people who send me that stuff for Christmas or whatever, like, oh, thanks, more junk for my house. Yeah. Awesome. Just what I need.
You know what I see you and Heather one day? Yeah. Antiquers.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so.
See you too,
I think you got that one wrong. From Mike, if a gift basket with wine from Napa was sent to your house, but it was addressed to the previous owner who sold you the house a decade ago.
A decade ago?
Yes.
Oh, that's yours.
Yeah.
Do you A, keep it?
Yes.
B, forward it to the person?
Nope.
Or C, re-gift it to the person as if it came from you.
Nope.
Wait,
years?
So they still are friends with the old
that's
owners?
That's weird. I'm going to throw C out because that's bizarre.
Yeah.
You keep it 10 years.
That's
10 years.
Yours.
What if it's year one? What if you have you have moved in May and at Christmas you get this gift?
Well, like, are they still in the area? Like, I bought my house from people that moved to Texas.
No, they're still in the
we
area.
We get a bunch of Christmas gifts for them.
If
I take them to the
they
mail.
They moved to Vashon Island.
Oh, well. That's probably yours still.
So really, there's no circumstance in which you don't keep the wine.
Unless they, like, moved in the neighborhood.
Brock, what
if
you
have to see them again.
Here's the thing. I'm willing to pass it
along. If
it's a
first year, you absolutely pass it along.
I'm willing to pass it along. I'm not willing to go through any trouble.
Yeah.
I'm willing to send, if I still have their email or contact or text or whatever, send them a note saying, hey, this came for you. It's on my front porch. Feel free to come get it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not spending the money to ship it to anybody, and I'm not driving it to their house.
Or you could reach out to the sender, not even to who it was supposed to be, but the people that send it and said, hey, listen, you sent this to me. What do you want me to do with it? And you can kind of put that burden back on them, and they'll go, oh, I'm sorry. Why don't you just keep that, and we'll send them. And if they've got, you know, the finances to send them one basket from Napa, more than likely they'll be like, oh, I'm not going to put you to the burden of going to the post office. We'll just send them another one. Thanks.
You would think. But there is no way. I would say 80% of the time they're going to ask you to send it back to them.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of wine, Damon gave me a bottle that's not yet been released.
Oh, really?
Yes. This is a special batch. I should show you guys the pictures of where these grapes are grown. It's one of the most spectacular sites
or
on the Columbia
Hills?
River. No, this is a different. This is a different little batch that they have. This little small planting. And honestly, it is one of the most beautiful spots that you're going to ever see. It's like the gorge. It's like part of the gorge. It's not the gorge, but it looks as if it could be. And he's like, they feel when this comes out of the barrel, this may be their first 100-point.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
that'll be big.
Yeah, he had, by the way, another shout-out to Damon. He won't brag about this. I will. You realize one of his passing times cabs was ranked number 23 in the world. That's out of thousands and thousands and thousands of cabs that get rated. All the way up to number 23.
Wow.
So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty neat.
Your thoughts on Pete's comment about Blair not being, quote, experienced enough to be considered over Lano Hill. Lano clearly was missing tackles and coverage. What is the deal? Yeah, do you understand that?
You know, when this season ends, when we do an obituary on all of it, one of the things we are going to have to talk about is the misread of C.J. Procise, the misread of Tedrick Thompson, the misread of Delano Hill. And it's not a misread of a season. You're talking 3 and 4 years that you plied into these guys that couldn't play.
We didn't get a chance to talk about Carson, or about Procise. You got to be kidding me. The guy stays healthy all year. I know he didn't play much, but he's there. He doesn't, like, tweak a hamstring or do anything. The moment they actually need him, he immediately breaks his arm. And this isn't a soft tissue injury.
No.
He didn't get a, like, ah, my hammy.
But you know the ball was in the wrong arm.
I know, but come on.
No, no. Put the ball when you're running to your right in your right arm so you can
stiff
arm.
But that's not why he broke his arm.
Yes, it was.
No, it isn't.
Okay.
That's mean.
All right.
What are the odds the guy would break his arm?
CJ Procise?
100%.
100, they were 100%.
Very, very 100%.
High. You know, amazingly, CJ's hurt his other ankle.
It's brutal.
Just amazing.
Absolutely sad.
All right. Are we done for today?
I don't know. Is that 2 hours?
I think so. We've been here forever.
Oh, my God.
We got to get out of here. We have to leave. It's been too much. I hope everybody has a great year. You got any big New Year's plans?
Yeah, we're going to have some time with our friends down in Bellevue. We're going to go ice skating.
Oh, I'm going.
I
got ice skates
midnight.
For Christmas.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I'm getting closer. Yeah, all of us, all four Salks now have ice skates. So I think I'm going to, I think the hockey thing's becoming a reality soon. Yeah.
Did you get your name embroidered into it? Anything special?
I did not get my name embroidered into my hockey skates. Okay. No. Is that something I should have done?
I don't know. I would have.
Why?
Put your initials. Just as a little special something.
Yeah.
Huh? They don't do that.
You feel like
skates?
That's something I should have done,
I think so. I think it's unique. It's like a personal element of your soul.
What color?
Your skates.
They're black. They're hockey skates.
Whoa, okay.
You never wear white
skates.
They're that bright
you're
green.
You're faster on white skates.
They're bright green like the Marshawn cleats that he was wearing the other night.
You are going to start playing hockey. Good
I think
you.
So. I'm getting closer to wanting to make this a reality. Good. And then as soon as I do, we can talk about how I've injured my sports hernia or something else with my core, and now I can barely walk.
You know what that is? That's 100%.
Yeah, pretty
that
much
will
is.
Be 100.
All right, we'll be back with you guys next week. We'll be able to break down the Philly game and a whole lot more. Hopefully we're getting ready for the divisional round of the playoffs. I'll talk to you guys then. Until then, the hay.
Barn.
See everybody. Have a great new year.
Get to the chopper!